Do you remember where you were when you heard the news 2 years ago today?
Developing news in Boston, the city now home to the 8th U.S. case of coronavirus. And tonight, officials across the country are investigating other potential cases, including in New York City. Worldwide, nearly 14,000 people have the coronavirus. That's 2,500 more cases from just yesterday.
It was 2 years ago. It was a lifetime ago. 4 months later, here we are. We are dealing with a much different story. 1.4 million cases in Massachusetts. 1.4 million over the last 2 years, roughly 378 million worldwide. Back then, the words Omicron, Delta were not everyday words. And the idea of shutting down the state or the world really still seemed unimaginable. Well, it is Tuesday, and we started Ask the Docs a month later, March of 2020. We were doing it every day of the week then, and we still, 2 years later, are doing it every Tuesday to help us navigate the pandemic. We're still here today, and we continue to answer your questions. So what do you need to know? Both how are you reflecting over the last 2 years, and what questions are coming up for you now that maybe you didn't have 2 years ago, maybe you didn't have 2 weeks ago, especially with potentially a vaccine for kids under five on the horizon. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet questions at Radio Boston. Joining us this week, Dr. Simone Wilds, an infectious disease expert at South Shore Health, and a new voice to Ask the Doctors, Bill Hanage, an epidemiologist and co-director of the Center for Communicable Disease Dynamics at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Dr. Wilds, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Dr. Hanage, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. So, Dr. Wilds, take us back to this day, 2 years ago. What were you thinking was going to happen?
Tiziana, I remember exactly where I was in the hospital when I heard about the first case. To be honest, my first thought was, you know, it's probably going to be mild, you know, similar to the flu. I never would imagine that things would change so quickly. I didn't anticipate so many deaths. I didn't anticipate working so hard. I just didn't anticipate so many patients, so many unknowns, just really learning information as fast as I could put my hands on it. Really, for me, a life-changing experience and continues until this day.
How about for you, Bill Hanage?
Well, I know exactly where I was. I was eating a taco. And I think my wife read out a local news report and I kind of went, oh, well, I guess that's not totally unexpected. I think that being an epidemiologist, I had a better sense of exactly where we were going because I wasn't surprised that it was here. I wasn't sure when it was going to start. And in fact, that first case, it doesn't look like it left many descendants in Massachusetts. We had to wait a while for it to be really introduced. But yeah, I know exactly where I was. It's one of those memories that will stay with me the rest of my life.
Did you think it was going to be what it's been? We've been living in it for 2 years now. It's hard for me to remember if there was anyone out there, Professor Hanage, saying this is going to be huge. This is 1918 is coming.
There were some people, but I think the difficult thing to remember is that it's very difficult to get a read on something like this early on because the data are just not all in. And so some people who did turn out to be right were not necessarily right because they had all the data. It's just, you know, a stopped clock. It's right twice a day. And since then, we've always been scrambling to try and keep on top of the data as much as we can. I think that at that point, it was pretty evident to most of us, if only because of the fact that we had seen what happened in Wuhan. And given what was happening in Wuhan, we had reason to think that something like that might happen somewhere else. But of course, there's a whole load of stuff from variants on, which we could not foresee at that time.
Let's go to the phones here. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Debbie on the line in Lowell. Debbie, go ahead.
Hi. I take care of two elderly people who have many health conditions, congestive heart failure, kidney failure, Alzheimer's, just a bunch of things, diabetes. So they've both been immunized and boosted. And we basically keep them in their homes right now because it's just, we're so afraid of them getting sick. But the question is, I don't know the name of the medication, I apologize. The one that was recently approved by the FDA that if you have mild symptoms, you can take it. Now, everything I've looked up says that with their medications they take for high blood pressure and everything and seizures and all these fun things, that there's no way for them to take it. I didn't know if maybe you know something about that or not, or if maybe you could suggest other things that we could do besides a very small bubble to keep them safe. They do usually have in-home PT, OT, nursing, et cetera, that we could possibly do to keep them safe until this is maybe gone.
So I appreciate the question, Debbie. And Dr. Wildes, you know, we have not had a lot of calls on Ask the Doctors over the years about the treatment methods. We talk tons about vaccines and prevention. Here's a treatment set of questions, as well as how do we expand the world as much as possible for two very vulnerable older adults?
Debbie, that's a great question. And one of the things that we have learned dealing with COVID is that we have gleaned very significant information about treatment options. You know, I remember when we were just really experimenting with the different drugs, a lot of different clinical trials. And when we started, you know, we were using remdesivir, which got approved, but now we have moved beyond that. And of course, vaccines have become a really, really important accomplishment. But now we have oral therapies. And I think what you're referring to, there are two new drugs that have been approved under EUA, molnupiravir, which is tablets that you can take. And for as soon as you're diagnosed with COVID, you get treated with that. Or there's another treatment option that's called Paxlovid. And that one in particular, you really have to make sure that your provider looks at all your medications because it causes a lot of drug-to-drug interactions. And so it's really important that your provider takes the time to look at what medications like your parents are on so that they don't end up with significant problems. So I think the key thing would be to make sure that you talk with your healthcare provider in case they get COVID, and they will look at the options that are available to them. So, you know, that's something that I would strongly recommend. And also, you know, we have monoclonal antibodies, which we give to people who are high risk for getting severe illness. So again, not yet another treatment option, which we have learned having gone through the pandemic.
Professor Hanage, before I go back to the phones, Dr. Wildes just made that reference to EUA, Emergency Use Authorization, which we talked a lot about in the early days of vaccines. It's not full approval by the FDA. It's a medicine that's approved under emergency circumstances for use. I bring it up to you for two reasons. One, the Moderna vaccine has just moved from emergency use authorization to full approval by the FDA. And two, we expect potentially as early as today for Pfizer to seek emergency use authorization for a vaccine for kids under the ages five and under five. So I want to ask you how important that designation is. And does it matter, you know, that Moderna crossed that hurdle? And should it matter to parents that this Pfizer vaccine, if it receives emergency use authorization, isn't quite past that hurdle yet?
Well, it's first thing to say is that it's fantastic that Moderna has managed to go past that, across the hurdle, and is now fully approved. This is these are really extraordinary vaccines. They're really great. With respect to the very specific question that was asked, I do want to point out that they do a hugely great job if people have been vaccinated and boosted, including among older age groups. I really want to emphasize that people who are older should be seeking to get boosted. Parents, once we have emergency use authorization for Pfizer, should recognize that this is a step on the road to being fully approved. It is at the moment being approved because of the specific emergency in which we are still within. I don't know if you've noticed, but we are living in a country where we are seeing more than 2,000 deaths every day at the moment on average. And that's partially as a result of transmission occurring within the community, including among children, even though children themselves are really, really unlikely to have severe disease. But getting those kids vaccinated is a way to provide them with some protection. And as a parent myself, I'd be very confident giving such a vaccine to my child.
We have a follow-up question on this, 800-423-8255. Ashley's on the line in Salem. Ashley, go ahead.
Hi. I was in the process last night of planning a drive from Salem, Massachusetts to Sarasota, Florida to see my 92-year-old grandmother who's never met my six-month-old and hasn't seen my four-year-old in 2 years when I saw the headline come through. And we stopped in our tracks and said, wait, maybe we could fly in April after our children could get vaccinated, including my six-month-old. Do I have reason to be as optimistic that they could be protected enough by mid-April with a vaccine?
Oh, Ashley, I'm a little choked up about your six-month-old not having met the 92-year-old grandparent and how excited you are. Dr. Wilds, Ashley's question.
Ashley, I think you can feel very reassured that by April, you will be able to take that trip. I think it's wonderful for families to get together, and it's even better when we can get everyone vaccinated. So I think you have a lot of hope that by April, they should be vaccinated and be able to go visit and have a fun time with your family there in Sarasota. So rest assured, everything will be okay.
800-423-8255. We have Jim on the line in Framingham. Jim, go ahead.
Hi, I have a couple of quick questions. One is the pneumonia shots. Nobody's talking about that. There was a doctor reported in the New York Times from New Hampshire, I believe, a gentleman in his 60s or 70s, and he's still practicing. And he noticed that there was a pneumonia aspect of this COVID-19. And nobody's talking about getting pneumonia shots as a preventive, whether you should get the pneumonia shots if you have COVID-19 or before 19. That's my first question. The other one is, what if you have a regular cold? That's a virus. And if you test positive taking the test, how do you know it's not from the cold virus?
All right. Okay, Jim, so two questions there. Dr. Wilds, I'll give you the first part, which is the relationship between suffering from COVID-19 and pneumonia. And the larger conversation, you know, whenever we talk about vaccines right now, we talk about COVID vaccines. There are shingles vaccines, flu vaccines, pneumonia shots. So pick up on that, Dr. Wilds.
Jim, it's really a great question because I do understand that there are a lot of people right now, the focus is on, you know, getting the COVID vaccine, but there are many other routine vaccines that we want to encourage everyone to get. You know, it's the flu season, so I want to encourage you to get the flu vaccine, but the pneumonia vaccine is also very important. And that is a discussion that your healthcare provider should be having with you. And if that hasn't happened, you can call and say, did I get my pneumonia shot? Am I due to get it? I think you might have to ask those questions because right now a lot of focus is on COVID, but we're trying to get back to doing all the routine care that we missed because of COVID. I mean, it really has changed our lives and we're trying to get back to all the care that we give for patients, you know, the diabetes, the hypertension, getting back to getting all the tests and all the vaccines so that we can keep everyone healthy while we try to manage COVID.
And Professor Hanisch, to the second part of the question, you know, we have so many questions around testing, and testing has certainly been a complicated subject for us over the last couple of months. You know, worries that if you have something else, as I understand it, a cold is basically a type of coronavirus, worries that you might test positive on a rapid antigen test and have something other than COVID. Can you address that worry, please?
Sure. I want to start, though, Jim, by saying, you know, pneumonia and vaccines against pneumonia are a subject very close to my heart. You can probably tell from my voice, I didn't grow up in Massachusetts, but the first reason I came here was in order to study the impact of those vaccines. And I ended up staying. when it comes to the testing piece, the coronaviruses which cause the, you know, the mild innocuous colds that we've been used to, they're really quite different. And so the rapid antigen tests are quite specific. The ones which are in use and which have been approved are specific, not perfectly specific, but there's a very, very low chance that you're going to get a false positive. Similarly, it's, you know, equally important to make sure that they are sensitive, so you're unlikely to get a false negative. This is one of the reasons, by the way, that I'm a big fan of rapid tests, because they can be, if you do turn out to be positive, it's a really useful piece of information that you can take on to protect others. If they are negative and you're in what you might call a high consequence situation, like you're visiting an elderly relative, it's probably still a good idea to take other steps like wearing a mask or doing it outdoors and stuff like that. Certainly at a point when you know there's a lot of virus in the community. Hopefully those numbers are going to come down and we'll be able to be a little bit more confident.
And when they do, Professor Hanage, when those, as those numbers are coming down, do you foresee and would you advocate for loosening of some of the restrictions and practices that we've been keeping close during this Omicron spread?
Well, I think we've unfortunately had a really, we've had real problems with having sensible conversations around pandemic management. When you have a lot of virus in the community, you need to do something to stop it. Yeah, that's just fundamental. At a point later on, though, we have to consider balancing the things which really matter to us and how we can do those things without producing a big problem for healthcare. That's always the issue here. We just heard about just how difficult and horrible the last few weeks have been in healthcare as a result of the Omicron surge. At a point when that eases, then we can start considering doing things which are a little bit more relaxed, always with the proviso that we might need to put things back in place if a new variant comes along. But I want to emphasize, we're a few weeks out from that, because even though cases are down, deaths in Massachusetts are still quite high, and hospitalizations, I think, have turned the corner, but they're not likely to be something which we can take for granted for quite a while yet.
1-800-423-8255. Bill in Middleton. Bill, what's your question?
Hi, my daughter turns 5 in late March, and she's actually just getting over about a COVID. She's about 10 days out from her diagnosis. I'm curious if it would make sense to wait until she turns 5 and get that dosage of vaccine, or get the under 5 approved vaccine as soon as that's available.
And again, folks, just to clarify, the news today is that Pfizer is anticipated to, as early as possibly today, seek emergency authorization use for the vaccine for kids under 5. There will then be a process, and we don't yet know for sure if and when the FDA will do that emergency use authorization. I just want to clarify where we are in the moment right now. So, Dr. Wildes, your answer to Bill's question.
Bill, I would say, given that your daughter just had COVID, and I hope she's doing much better, and she had very mild symptoms, I think given that we're in February and she's going to be 5 in March, I probably would just wait to give her her vaccine at that point, because she will have enough antibodies that should last her, you know, we'd say at least 90 days. So she should be covered. If it was a different timeline, meaning she wasn't going to be 5 so quickly, I would say would probably give her the less than 5 vaccine. But I think right now you could wait until she gets to 5 to give her the vaccine for the 5 to 11.
And Professor Hanage, briefly, what is the realistic expectation for whether and when the FDA will give emergency use authorization to the vaccine for kids under 5?
Unfortunately, I can tell you a lot about the expected dynamics and events for the virus, but it's a lot harder to predict the expected behavior of people, including the FDA. So I would want to hold off on that. It could be a little while, so I'm not going to make strong predictions there.
So are there any predictions, lightning round here, we have just less than a minute left, any predictions you do want to make, Professor Hanage?
Well, I think that if you look at the numbers we've got at the moment, we can see that they've been coming down pretty robustly. They've gone down considerably below those we've seen in some European countries. And I suspect that they're going to continue to remain low. However, the problem in healthcare is going to remain, because most of that big peak was in younger people, and now older folks are getting infected. Once we're through that, hopefully we're going to be in a position where we're going to be able to take a deep breath. But, you know, only fools with short memories make strong promises during a pandemic.
All right. And on that note, we'll end. That was William Hanage, epidemiologist and co-director of the Center for Communicable Diseases Dynamics at Harvard's T.H. Chan School, and Dr. Simone Wilds, infectious disease expert at South Shore Health. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show. You've been listening to Radio Boston.